Since it is Mother's Day, and we've been studying on our second Sunday night about why we need to study the Bible, what things can we learn from the Bible? Well, one of the things that we can learn from the Bible is what mothers ought to be. Now, there's a couple different directions we could go with that. We could just really come down hard on the mothers and talk about all the things they're doing wrong that they ought to be doing right. And I'd probably not make it out of here alive if I did that. So I better not do that. But what we will talk about is how we should be treating mothers and motherhood in general. And so we want to consider those things. So we're going to start with mothers ought to be materially valued by all. And we do have an outline if you're interested in it back on the back table there. If you want to fill that in or have something to doodle on. They should be materially valued. The scripture that was read just a few moments ago from Proverbs 31 verses 10 through 12 bears that out. He talks about, in this case, he's just talking about a virtuous woman. She's not yet even a mother. He's talking about a man finding a wife, a woman of virtue to have. And he says her price is far above rubies. He says there is a worth to her that is so great that really it's difficult to put a material value on it. But guess what? People try. And one such to that was this. It was an article called "The Value of a Mother," and it was actually written by a Sarah Israelson Hartley, and this was from Deseret News. They had an entire article about how much is a mother worth, and they do that with the human body sometimes. How much is the human body worth? Well, it's got this much carbon and this much oxygen, and you add that all up and it's worth $5.33 or whatever. Well, we know that's not right. That's not an accurate value. Well, they try to do the same thing with the mother. Well, what all does a mother do? And so they start adding up. Well, you know, she drives the kids to soccer practice or what other things they're doing, you know. So she's kind of like a chauffeur. And she does grocery shopping, and she cleans bathrooms and washes clothes, does, you know, all these. And they tried to categorize all the different jobs she does and give a value in the marketplace to what that is. And so they valued it, you know, about $18 an hour for tutoring when she helps that kid with the homework. And, you know, another $18 for nursing wounds that a nurse might get. You know, a different thing. And then I will say, this is a few years old, this value. So inflation hits in some of these things. But at the time, I think this was 2011. At that time, when they did this little article and tried to value it, they came up with, well, what's it all worth? Well, if you added it all up and tried to hire somebody to do that job, they came up with $61,436 a year. And probably most of us would say, you know, that's probably undervaluing what a mother really does. That's just taking the jobs that she does and giving those a value. That doesn't begin to give a value to the love and the nurture and the support and the emotional connection and the strength that she provides to the family either, does it? It doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of the real value. But it is interesting. But we should realize there is an actual material value there that's being produced by a mother. There are things that she does, some of which could be replaced, like getting the laundry done or driving somebody to soccer practice. Those could be replaced with $60,000 a year, give or take some inflation in the time since this was done. However, there are many other things that she does that just can't be replaced by hiring someone to do it. It just doesn't work that way. And so while there is a material value, we need to respect that. We need to honor her for that. But we need to realize, of course, that her value goes far, far beyond any of that. I was told by someone just the other day that I'm in the wrong occupation. If I would get into the job of giving speeches motivational speeches at schools and things, they get paid $5,000 a speech, some of these folks. And I thought, wow, $5,000 a speech. You know how much you could make in a week like that? Go to 10 different schools, you know, two a day. You could make some real money doing it. So if a mother gives a few motivational speeches to those kids, that would really jack that price up, wouldn't it? If she tries to motivate them, give them some confidence, really turn their lives around. So there are a lot of things like that it is very difficult to put a money value on. But again, the writer of Proverbs tells us, her value is, it's worth more than rubies. You cannot afford to buy that. There's not a price that you could put on it that would be a fair trade. Secondly, mothers ought to be obeyed by children. Now, we all know that. We were all children at one time, and our mothers expected us to obey. And then those of us who had children, we expected those children to obey their mother. Ephesians 6, 1 through 3 talks about that. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. We talked about that this morning, so we don't want to rehash that. But it's certainly a biblical principle. Obey your parents, your mother and your father. In Deuteronomy 21, 18 through 21, in fact, it went this far. Now, I don't want to scare some of you adults out there, but I want us to listen carefully to what he says here. If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son, which will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and that when they have chastened him, he will not hearken to them. So this is a rebellious child, won't listen to mom and dad. But here's the scary part for us adults. The father and mother lay hold on him and bring him to the elders of the city, to the city gate, and they shall say, this our son is rebellious and stubborn. He will not obey our voice. Now listen to this part. He is a glutton and a drunkard. We're not talking about a six-year-old here. This was somebody that was old enough to be a drunkard and still was being rebellious. So we might say, well, that's a teenager that's running out getting into trouble. But then it says, all the men of the city shall stone him with stones that he die, and you shall put away the evil from among you. How many of us... Now we might say, well, I was never a drunkard, I was never a glutton. But how many of us would have survived if that had been the standard that our parents lived by? And the idea here, and we have to understand about the Jewish culture, this was quite possibly a grown son who was acting this way. This wasn't a child. This was a grown son. He's a glutton, he's rebellious, and he's a drunkard. This isn't somebody who's still, you know, a little kid living at home and just has a little willful spirit here. This is one that's continued that pattern on into life. But can you imagine? I told Tim and Scott, I said, I think that's why they put all those rocks out front. So next time we have a stoning, the stones will be right there at hand. You ever notice that? Jesus is teaching in the temple and he says something that upsets people. And they pick up stones to stone him. Where did they get the stones? I mean, you know, you're not like out on the mountainside where there's a lot of rocks. You're in the temple. Did they have just like a big basket of rocks there with a sign above it? Use only for stonings. I don't know. I mean, where did they get... You're in the temple. Where are you picking up big rocks to throw at somebody to kill them? I don't know, it's an odd thing. Maybe they had some landscaping like we have. Maybe that's what they're standing outside the temple, grab a rock. You know, we'll go get it. But maybe that was the case. But that was their practice for all sorts of, you know, when it worst came to worst, somebody was wicked and evil. And notice that. They described this person, you know, we describe, well, they're self-willed. They got a mind of their own. They're an individual. They're going charting their own course. That's not the way they viewed it. This was a rebellious, evil person that needed to be killed to get them out of society. And that's pretty extreme. Now, let me say one more thing about the obeyed by her children. Because some of you are saying, I'm a grandparent. You know, this doesn't have anything to do with me. All right, grandparents, here you go. Those mothers of those grandchildren, you can help or you can hinder by the way that you react when the mother tells the child to do something. And I've seen a lot of grandparents who undermined the authority of the child's parents. Now, some of them, I think, did it intentionally and spitefully. Some of them, I don't think they realized what they were even doing. But the mother or father said, no, you can't have another cookie. And grandma says, oh, it's okay, here, have another cookie. What are we teaching those children? Your mother and father don't have the right to tell you what to do. You can just ignore them. I'll give you that anyway. We've got to be careful. And we may do the same thing. Yeah, I've been total strangers. I'll tell my children, you know, we're walking out of the grocery store and they're whining. I want a gumball. No, you can't have one because you're whining. And some kindly stranger will go and get a quarter, put it in the gumball, and get the gumball. Here, let them have a gumball. No, if they had asked kindly and politely, and may I please have a gumball? Sure. They went, I'll have a gumball. Can I have a gumball? Not now. You can't have a gumball now. And then this, you know, but we undermine the parent's authority. Now, sometimes, are parents wrong sometimes? Yes. But is in front of the child and just undermining the parent's authority the way to deal with that? No. You know, we might want to pull that parent aside and say, look, I saw what happened with your child there, and, you know, do you think maybe this might work better and be a better way to handle it? Or, you know, I've seen other people do it this way. You might, you know, maybe that would be more effective or something like that. We can do that. And we may be, you know, we may want to encourage them, may want to give them a parenting book or any number of things to encourage them to do a good job. But we want to tell, we appreciate that you're trying to raise your children right. We want to support that, and we want to help you, and we don't want to undermine your authority with that child. And we need to be aware of that, because that is something, you know, I see, you know, mother-in-laws that, well, the daughter, she's not good enough for my son anyway, you know, and that kind of thing. And the father-in-laws on the other side, he's not good enough for my daughter. He doesn't deserve, you know, this kind of an attitude can get us into trouble. And it causes us to discourage parents because you're like, well, the kids are against me. The grandparents are against me. Everybody's against me. What am I going? How can I teach my child what's right when everybody else is telling them everything else? All right. This way, with preaching and with dancing, I have this problem. I'm liable to step on your toes. So, you know, that's the danger that you have there. Most of you will never dance with me, so that won't be a problem, but you can ask Dawn about that. But as far as the preaching goes, you might get your toes stepped on. That's okay. We've all done that probably, sometimes without thinking, not intentionally. Mothers should be tenderly loved by all. And now, we all know, there are some women who have given birth that have some real problems. They weren't mothers. They gave birth, but that's about it. We all know that. We all know that they're out there. But even those, they need some love. But especially those good mothers who are out there trying, and sometimes it seems like they just don't get the love they need. They don't get the respect they need. Ruth chapter 1 and verses 14 through 17. And now, this wasn't actually a mother. This was, shock, gasp, believe it or not, a mother-in-law. I know everybody's supposed to hate their mother-in-law. That's what everybody, you can't love your mother. But listen to what Ruth and Orpah both, they lifted, when Naomi was going to leave, they lifted up their voice and they wept. Most folks, mother-in-law is leaving, they're like, oh yeah, can't wait till she's gone. That says something about Naomi. She was a good woman. But it also says something about Ruth and Orpah. They had respect for that position of motherhood. They kissed their mother. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her and would not let go. Now that's a good, loving family relationship right there. Now she finally said to Ruth, you know, your sister, she sister-in-law, she went back to her people and to her God. You need go on back. But listen to what Ruth said, of course, we know. Entreat me not to leave you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. We've actually taken that, that passage is so strong. We've actually taken that, and some people have used that as wedding vows of the kind of devotion that that represents. Obviously, it didn't have anything to do with the wedding, but that just that idea of I'm going to be so close to you. I'm never going to leave you. I'm going to be with you. And where you die, I will die. And the Lord do so to me and more also if anything except death parts us. Ruth tenderly loved her mother-in-law. Mothers are certainly to be tenderly loved by all. John 19, 25 through 27, we see Jesus and His concern over His mother. He saw His mother. He said, "Woman, behold your son." And then He saw the disciple that He loved standing there. And He said to the disciple, "Behold your mother." So he said, you take care of my mom for me. I'm not going to be able to anymore. I think that was one of the most difficult things Jesus had to do, to know that He was not going to be able to take care of His mother. That was the firstborn's responsibility, you know, was to take care of mom and dad when they got older. Now, the indication here seems to be that Joseph has already died. A lot of times an older man would marry a younger woman, and by this time, you know, Jesus is already 30-something, and so Joseph would have been an older man by now. And in that day and age, a lot of men didn't necessarily live as long. And so the indication, you know, that his mother's standing there, Joseph obviously isn't there to take care of her anymore. Or he wouldn't have been saying this. And so Jesus would have been the one that's supposed to take care of her, but now he's dying, he can't take care of her. Somebody's got to take care of her. And so he turns to John and he says, "John, take care of my mother for me." He didn't put it in the words like that that we would. But that's he said to Mary, "He's your son now." And he said to John, "She's your mother now." And John took her into his home from that day forward and took care of her. Now some might ask, where were Jesus' brothers? Why aren't they taking care of her? Some of them may have help at some point along the way. But Jesus gives that responsibility to John. Mother should be honored by her family. Proverbs 31, 27 through 31. She looks well to the ways of her household. She doesn't eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Husbands, when you're talking to somebody else about your wife, how do you talk about her? Is she the old ball and chain? Or is she the most beautiful woman in the world that you're lucky to have? It makes a difference. My mom used to have a little magnet on her refrigerator. Said, if you treat your wife like a thoroughbred, she'll never turn into an old nag. There's probably some truth to that. But how do we honor our wives, our mothers? It says, many daughters have done virtuously, but you excel them all. Favor is deceitful, beauty is vain, but a woman that fears the Lord shall be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands. Let her own works praise her in the gates. We talked about that passage this morning as well. And Matthew 15, 4 through 9. God said, honor your father and mother. He that curses father or mother, let him die the death. But you say, whoever shall say to his father or mother, whatever I would have given to you, I'm giving as a gift to God, and doesn't honor his father or mother, is free. And you have made the command of God of no effect by your tradition. You hypocrites. Isaiah was right in prophesying of you. This people draws near me with their lips, but with their mouth and honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. Mothers are to be honored. God expects that. Jesus expects that. And if we come up with excuses, now he didn't say only the really good mothers. Well, if your mother didn't treat you right when you were 12, you don't have to. He doesn't even say any of that. Now, don't you know there were some Jewish mothers that weren't all they should have been? But Jesus didn't say, well, there's exceptions, and if your mom wasn't a good one, then you don't have to honor her. He still said, you honor her. And mothers should be encouraged by all. Luke chapter 7, verses 11 through 16. Jesus was coming along and found the widow of Nain. Her husband had already died. And now there's a dead man being carried out. It's her only son. So her husband's already died, and now her only son is dying. And for us, we say, well, that's really sad, but you know, she's got Social Security, she'll be okay. But no, that wasn't the case back then. If a husband died and didn't leave a big chunk of change for his wife, then the only way that she was going to be able to survive in that society without begging for a living was if her children took care of her, her sons in particular. And this woman only had one son, and now she's burying him. Who's left to take care of her? Nobody. And so Jesus sees this situation. He had compassion on her, verse 13 says. And he came to her and said, do not weep. And he touched the casket thing there that they were carrying him on, the bier, the King James calls it, not beer like the kind people drink, but a B-I-E-R. And so he comes and he touches that. And he said, young man, I say to you, arise. And he rose from the dead and sat up, began to speak, and he gave him back to his mother. And it's in the only case, you know, in the Old Testament, we see that happening with Elisha and Elijah both, where there was a young boy of a widow or a woman who died, and they brought him back to life and gave him back to their mothers. And but that's the kind of encouragement. Now, well, I can't raise the dead. No, sometimes we may need to be that son to that mother that doesn't have one. Sometimes we may need to find others to encourage her in that area. One of the ways that we encourage those mothers is by giving it now. You know, a lot of people, it seems, it's like they're waiting for the funeral to say all the good things they want to say about somebody, to do all the good things. You ever been to a funeral and boy, there's just so many flowers, and yet you know that this person who's died was mistreated by those family members and so-called friends while they were alive. But boy, when they died, then they go spend hundreds of dollars for flowers, and they get the fanciest casket and all of those things. Sometimes people do it that way, don't they? But that's backwards. Give it now. If you have a smile for mother, give it now. If you have a kindly word, speak it now. She'll not need it when the angels greet her at the golden gate. Give the smiles while she is living. If you wait, twill be too late. If you have a flower for mother, pluck it now. Place it gently on her bosom. Print a kiss upon her brow. What cares she when life is over for the flowers that bloom below? She will have her share up yonder, scattered at her feet galore. Sometimes we forget to give it now. And that, of course, that doesn't just apply to mothers. We need to share our compliments and our love and our kindnesses to one another every opportunity we have. Because we never know when we'll run out of those opportunities. And then we'll wish we could have said something or done something that we could have said or done. Let's take those opportunities while we can and give it now. Mothers should be respected by all. They ought to be respected by all. The story is told of the town that was giving out an award for its greatest citizen, the greatest citizen in the town. There were several nominees. They finally narrowed it down to just a few, and they were, these finalists were there. One was a businessman, and he had done some great things in the community. He had donated money for parks to be built and all sorts of things. And he was a good, honest businessman, never cheated anyone, kept the economy going in the little town. A good man. Honored and honorable. Well, there was also a soldier. He'd gone off to war. He'd won awards, you know, Bronze Star, Purple Heart. He'd been a hero protecting us from danger. And some suggested that he would be the right one. And then there was a doctor. Oh, he had delivered so many babies and he had saved so many lives and helped so many regain their health. Oh, surely this doctor in town is the one that should get that. And there was one more. A little old lady. She'd never really done anything fantastic. She hadn't donated any money. She hadn't gone off to fight in war. She hadn't saved any lives that anyone knew of particularly, other than maybe a cat or a dog of her children. But when they searched deeply throughout the town, they finally decided that she was the one that should receive this award. Because you see, she was the mother of those other three. And the town wouldn't have had any of them without her. Sometimes we forget that every great deed done by someone, man or woman, was done because some mother somewhere brought that child into the world. And then in Exodus 21, verses 15 through 17, again, it's very clear. If you hit your father or mother, you're supposed to be put to death. That's the old law. Glad we're not under that. Some of us would be in trouble. Some of us never would have survived. If you curse your father and mother, you're supposed to be put to death. Respect. Now, we may not be under the old law, but that doesn't mean that we can just ignore that concept. In fact, that is taught in the New Testament. Honor your father and mother as well. Proverbs 23:22 says, "Hearken to your father that begat you, and do not despise your mother when she is old." Sometimes I'm afraid people do that very thing. The story is told of the couple who was taking care of grandfather. And grandfather was getting older, and grandfather was starting to have a little bit of difficulty, and grandfather would sometimes knock his cup over and sometimes spill food or knock his bowl over and spill his soup and things like that. And sometimes he'd drop a dish and break it. And so this couple decided, well, we're going to give Grandpa a wooden bowl so he can't break it. And we're going to set him over at a table over there, because sometimes Grandpa would eat. It was, you know, kind of disgusting to try to watch him eat at the table with them. And so they put him over in the corner by himself to eat. Well, this couple had a child. And as the child got older and began to see what was going on, one day the child said, "I can't wait until you're old so I can give you a wooden bowl and put you over in the corner." The couple was struck by what they were doing and what they were teaching. How often do we give the wrong message? My grandmother lived her final 5 or 6 years in a nursing home, not knowing who she was or anyone else around her. And it was hard emotionally to go see her. But at the same time, it was important to go see her. Now, we lived far away, so we weren't able to be there every week like those that lived right there in the town with her. My mother spent a lot of time with her. But whenever we would come to town, one of the things that our trip involved was going to see Grandma. Even though she did not know who we were, she didn't even react when we'd walk in the room. She didn't even know we were there. But we knew we were there. And our children knew we were there. And my mother knew that we were there. And we need to realize how important it is to give that respect, even when it's difficult. And then finally, mothers should be supported physically, emotionally, and spiritually. We forget some of that sometimes. But in every way that we can support them, we need to support them. We know that on the whole, generally speaking, women are just not physically as strong as men. And so, especially as they get older, they're going to have some weaknesses. They're going to need some physical strength. They're going to need to be supported in that way. Emotionally, we know that many times women are more emotional than men. Things touch them more deeply. And it can be very easy to forget how much emotion there may be wrapped up in their hearts. And of course, spiritually. It may come to the point where those mothers are no longer able to get out and go to church. They're no longer able to get about and do those things with others as they once could. Maybe their eyesight's failing and they can't read the Bible to themselves as they once did. Many things like that can take place that make it difficult for them to continue to have their spiritual needs met. We need to be sure to support them in those situations. 1 Timothy 5, 3 and 4 says, "Honor widows that are widows indeed. If any widow have children or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home and to repay their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God." We need to remember our mothers cared for us when we couldn't care for ourselves. And if it gets to the point that they struggle to care for themselves, we need to be there for them. And not only our own mothers, but other mothers within the church. Some may not have children or nephews anywhere nearby that can help them. And we need to be a church family that helps them. He says that certainly if they need to learn it first. The children and the nephews and the grandchildren need to learn it first. But many times there are widows that don't have that family to support them, and they still need that support. In 1 Timothy 5, 9 and 10, "Let not a widow be taken into the number under 60 years old. Having been the wife of one man, well reported of for good works, she's brought up children, if she's lodged strangers, if she's washed the saints' feet, if she's relieved the afflicted, if she's diligently followed every good work." The idea here was something that, as far as I know, churches today, I've not known of one that really practiced this. But in the first century, of course, they didn't have life insurance. They didn't have Social Security. And so when there was a widow, and she'd been a faithful Christian, and she may not have had the means to provide for herself, the church would take her in and they would provide for her. They would make sure that she had her daily food and make sure that she had a place to live. I don't know that that happens a whole lot in the church today. I think perhaps in some mission fields in foreign countries, some of that kind of thing still goes on. I've talked to some missionaries that were missionaries in India and Indonesia, and places where it seems like that culture, they still kind of do that. Especially in those cultures where the family, if someone becomes a Christian, everybody shuns that person. They reject them entirely. And so the church really is their family much more. And they don't have the kind of wealth in many of those situations that we have in the United States. They don't have the government assistance programs and the retirement programs and life insurance and Social Security and those things. It's kind of While those things are a great blessing, in a way sometimes that has kind of hindered us because we've now put the care of our parents and the elderly in the congregation, we put that off of, well, that's, you know, the government, they got Social Security and stuff. They'll be okay. And it's kind of sad. We've lost that connection that the early church had because they were daily providing for those needs. And it was a necessary thing. In fact, that's what we see in Acts 6 with the seven who were first chosen to wait tables, to make sure that all of the widows got their daily food and none went hungry. What a wonderful thing that is. Well, as you can see, that spells out mothers down there with the first letter of each one of those. But mothers certainly need all of those things. They ought to be treated with that kind of love and care and respect and honor. If you're here tonight and you've not done the things that you ought to do in your life, if you've not lived your life in the way that you should, for whatever reason, if you need to respond to God's invitation, please do so as we stand and sing.